Savannah has been killed by the sages because of his refusal to act properly from the position of king. He acted in a demonic way, placing himself in the center, trying to stop the service of the Lord. So the sages saw that after Vena was killed, the one good thing that he was doing was, due to his strength and cruelty, there were no thieves and plunderers, criminals. They were terrified. So when Vena was killed, the criminal element made itself again prominent. So the sages decided to do something about it out of their compassion. So what did they do? They did something very wonderful and very mystical. They began to churn the body of Vena, even though it was dead. But it had been preserved with herbs and mantras. And they began to churn that body, and from that, the thighs of that body was produced Bahuka, the personification of the sin of Vena. Because the sin had to be gotten rid of for them to get the proper child to rule the world. Because the lineage of Dhruva Maharaj was so strong, they wanted a descendant of Dhruva Maharaj and Anga to rule the world. So first the sinfulness was removed through this Bahuka, and he was sent to the forest. And then, as we'll start reading now, they continued using the mystic method of churning. So Maitreya explains to Vidura in text 1 of the 15th chapter. My dear Vidura, thus the brahmanas and the great sages again churn the two arms of King Vena's dead body. Now they churn those arms. As a result, a male and female couple came out of his arms. The great sages were highly learned in Vedic knowledge. When they saw the male and female born of the arms of Vena's body, they were very pleased, for they could understand that the couple was an expansion of a plenary portion of Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So who was born? From Vena, Prithu Maharaj, who was called the Adiraj, and his wife-to-be, whose name was Archi. Now, Prithu Maharaj was a Shaktavesh avatar, as we'll hear. That means, Shakti means power, and Avesh means entered within. So the power of Krishna, even though he was a living entity, the power of Krishna, he was specifically empowered by Krishna to rule. And Archi was also a Shaktavesh avatar of Lakshmi Devi, the goddess of fortune, who was the eternal consort of the Lord. Here's Prabhupada's short purport. The method adopted by the great sages and scholars who were learned in Vedic knowledge was perfect. They removed all the reactions of King Vena's sinful activities by seeing that King Vena first gave birth to Bahuka, described in the previous chapter. After King Vena's body was thus purified, a male and female came out of it, and the great sages could understand that this was an expansion of Lord Vishnu. This expansion, of course, was not Vishnu Tattva, but a specifically empowered expansion of Lord known as Avesh. That means the Lord's power entered into him. So he wasn't God, he was a jiva, a living entity, but empowered by the potency of the Lord. So the great sages, after they understood that the Lord had come, they said, the male is a plenary expansion of the power of Lord Vishnu. So he has the power. So how are things in Orissa? So you solve the problem. Return it. Thank you. So the male is a plenary expansion of the power of Lord Vishnu, who maintains the entire universe. So the sages understood who he was. And the female is a plenary expansion of the goddess of fortune, who is never separated from the Lord. Here's Prabhupada's purport. The significance of the goddess of fortunes never being separated from the Lord is clearly mentioned herein. People in the material world are very fond of the goddess of fortune, and they want her favor in the form of riches. So everyone is seeking the favor of the goddess of fortune. They want fortune to go in their direction. Especially they want money and power to go in their direction. They should know, however, that the goddess of fortune is inseparable from Lord Vishnu. Materialists should understand that the goddess of fortune should be worshipped along with Lord Vishnu and should not be regarded separately. People should not try to separate fortune or wealth from the Lord, because Lakshmi Devi is meant for the service of the Lord. Lakshmi Devi wants to serve the Lord. Otherwise she is chanchal. She is always moving here and there. So sometimes fortune will favor somebody for some time, and then misfortune, then she will leave. The goddess of fortune will leave that person and go somewhere else. But she never leaves the service of the Lord's lotus feet. So Lakshmi Devi is inseparable from Lord Vishnu, from the Lord. Materialists should understand that the goddess of fortune should be worshipped with Lord Vishnu, not independently of him, and should not be regarded separately. People should not try to separate wealth from the Lord and use the wealth for their own satisfaction. Materialists seeking the favor of the goddess of fortune must worship Lord Vishnu and Lakshmi together to maintain material opulence. If a materialist follows the policy of Ravan, who wanted to separate Sita from Lord Ramachandra, the process of separation will vanquish him. It will kill him. Those who are very rich and who have taken favor of the goddess of fortune in this world must engage their money in the service of the Lord. In this way, they can continue in their opulent position without disturbance. So the sages continue. Of the two, the male will be able to expand his reputation throughout the world. His name will be Prithu. Indeed, he will be the first amongst kings. Prithu Shrava. He will be widely renowned. The great king. The female has such beautiful teeth and beautiful qualities that she will actually beautify the ornaments that she wears. What does that mean? That's an analogy that's used. Krishna is known as Padam Padam Bhushana Bhushanangam, that he is the ornament of ornaments. Because usually, say if we have someone is dressing, so what do? They put on some jewelry, some ornaments, for what purpose? So that they become more beautiful, so they look more beautiful. So the ornaments beautify the person that the ornaments are wearing. But in Krishna's case, it's quite different. That the ornaments become more beautiful when they adorn the body of the Lord. The ornaments are beautified. They become wonderful. So similarly, the queen, she beautifies the ornaments that she wears. Her name is Archie. Her name will be Archie, and in the future she will accept King Prithu as her husband. In the form of King Prithu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead has appeared through a part of his potency to protect the people of the world. So a part of his potency, the Lord's potency, has entered into Prithu Maharaj. And he is empowered. For what purpose? To protect the people of the world. Because King Vena was such a poor king, was doing the worst thing for the people of the world. So the Lord himself appeared to help the people. The goddess of fortune is the constant companion of the Lord, and therefore she has incarnated partially as Archie to become King Prithu's queen. So both of them were Shaktivesh avatars. Shakti again means power, and Avesh means entering in. So when the Lord's power enters in, then it is called Shaktivesh. The great sage Maitreya continued, "My dear Vaduraji, at that time all the Brahmanas highly praised and glorified King Prithu, and the best singers of Gandhava Loka chanted his glories. The inhabitants of Siddhaloka showered flowers, and the beautiful women in the heavenly planets danced in ecstasy. Conch shells, bugles, drums, and kettle drums vibrated in outer space. Great sages, forefathers, and personalities from the heavenly planets all came to earth from various planetary systems. Lord Brahma, the master of the entire universe, arrived there accompanied by all the demigods and their chiefs. Seeing the lines on Lord Vishnu's palm, on King Prithu's right hand, and the impressions of lotus flowers on the soles of King Prithu's feet, Lord Brahma could understand that King Prithu was a partial representation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One whose palm bears the sign of a disc as well as other such lines should be considered a partial representation or incarnation of the Supreme Lord. The learned Brahmanas, who were very attached to the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies, then arranged for the king's coronation." And Prabhupada explained in the previous verse that Lord Brahma recognized him, the child of Vena, who was extracted from Vena by the sages. He recognized him as the Lord by specific signs that he had. It's not just whimsical. Oh, someone, one person is God. A person claims to be Bhagawan or the Lord, and then other people say he's God, and then everyone starts calling him God. But no, there are specific signs that are mentioned in the Shastra. So Brahma recognized him as the Lord by these signs. So they arranged for the king's coronation. People from all directions collected all the different paraphernalia for the ceremony, thus everything was complete. All the rivers, seas, hills, mountains, serpents, cows, birds, animals, heavenly planets, the earthly planets, and all other living entities collected various presentations according to their ability to offer the king. So that's such a nice point, that everyone, according to what they have, they give. But the principle of giving is universal, that at the proper times it should be giving. So at these times for there to be auspiciousness for the king and to welcome him at the coronation, everyone gave, but there wasn't a specific amount or anything that they gave, but they gave according to their abilities. So now we're going to hear what was given according to the opulences and abilities of the people. Thus the great King Prithu, exquisitely dressed with garments and ornaments, was coronated and placed on the throne. The king and his wife Archie, who was also exquisitely ornamented, appeared exactly like fire. She was so beautiful with the complexion, golden complexion it must be. Oh, the king appeared like fire. The great sages continued, "My dear Vidura, Kuvera," who is the, we heard about Kuvera previously in the previous chapters with Dhruva Maharaj, and he's the treasure amongst the demigods. "He presented the great king Prithu with a golden throne. The demigod Varuna presented him with an umbrella that constantly sprayed fine particles of water and was as brilliant as the moon. The demigod of air, Vayu, presented King Prithu with two whisks, chamaras of hair," because by the whisks, these chamaras, they make a pleasing breeze. Achcha. "The king of religion, Dharma, presented him with a flower garland which would expand his fame. The king of heaven, Indra, so that shows that through religiousness one gets famous. The king of heaven, Indra, presented him with a valuable helmet, and the superintendent of death, Yamaraj, presented him with a scepter with which to rule the world, because ultimately Yamaraj is the ruler of this world, so he can bless someone, it seems, with the ability to rule the world, because his Yamaraj's law is unbreakable within this world. What is that you're passing around? Where is it from? This Mahaprasada from India. Came through the window, just flew in. What color was the bird that brought it? Green? Green parrot from Vrindavan? That's what I'm wondering. Huh? Excuse me? Brought prasadam. But you don't know where it is from. Yeah? He doesn't know. From the window. It's very mysterious what happens around here. Lord Brahma presented King Prithu with a protective garment made of spiritual knowledge. Also very interesting, because spiritual knowledge is that which protects us. Bharati Saraswati, the wife of Brahma, gave him a transcendental necklace. Lord Vishnu presented him with a Sudarshan disc, and Lord Vishnu's wife, the goddess of fortune, gave him imperishable opulences. Here's Srila Prabhupada's purport. All the demigods presented various gifts to King Prithu. Hari, an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead known as Pendra in the heavenly planets, presented the king with a Sudarshan disc. It should be understood that this Sudarshan disc is not exactly the same type of Sudarshan disc used by the Personality of Godhead, Krishna or Vishnu. Since Maharaj Prithu is a partial representation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead's power, the Sudarshan disc given to him represented the partial power of the original Sudarshan disc. Lord Shiva presented him with a sword within a sheath marked with 10 moons, and his wife, the goddess Durga, presented him with a shield marked with 100 moons. The moon demigod presented him with horses made of nectar, and the demigod Vishwakarma presented him with a very beautiful chariot. The demigod of fire, Agni, presented him with a bow made of the horns of goats and cows. The sun god presented him with arrows as brilliant as sunshine. The predominating deity of Burloka presented him with slippers full of mystic powers. The demigods from outer space brought him presentations of flowers again and again. Purport. This verse describes that the king's slippers were invested with mystic powers. You like that idea, don't you? Thus, as soon as the king placed his feet in the slippers, they would immediately carry him wherever he desired. Now, Sahasta, that's something that you would like. You could save money on airfares and also on the train. You can say, downtown, TAFE. Mystic yogis can transfer themselves from one place to another whenever they desire. A similar power was invested in the slippers of King Prithu. So who brought him this? The predominating deity of Gurloka. I don't know who that is. Text 19. The demigods who always travel in outer space gave King Prithu the arts to perform drama, sing songs, play musical instruments, and disappear at his will. The great sages also offered him infallible blessings. The ocean offered him a conch shell produced from the ocean. The seas, mountains, and rivers gave him room to drive his chariot without impediments. And Asuta, Amagda, and Avandi offered prayers and praises. They all presented themselves before him to perform their respective duties. So the Sutas, the Magadas, and the Avandis, their business Sometimes Prabhupada will translate them, what they do is they're professional reciters of prayers. So they praise someone. That is their business. The kings need to be praised. Like that. Thus when the greatly powerful King Prithu, the son of Vena, saw the professionals before him to congratulate them, he smiled. And with the gravity of the vibrating sound of clouds, he spoke as follows. So these personalities whose business was to praise, they were very sweet speakers, and they were very learned and intelligent, and they would praise, that's what their profession was. They would praise the ruler. And in return, they would be maintained by the ruler. So King Prithu said to them, O gentle Sutta, Magadha, and other devotee offering prayers, the qualities of which you have spoken are not distinct in me. Why then should you praise me for all these qualities, when I do not shelter these features? I do not wish for these words meant for me to go in vain, but it is better that they be offered to someone else. So when they began to praise him, he said, no, don't praise me. You praise someone else with your words. So here's what Prabhupada explains. The prayers and praises by the Sutta, Magadha, and Vandi all explain the godly qualities of Maharaj Prithu. For he was a Shaktavish incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because the qualities were not yet manifest, however, King Prithu very humbly asked why the devotees should praise him with such exalted words. He did not want anyone to offer him prayers or glorify him unless he possessed the real qualities of which they spoke. The offering of prayers was certainly appropriate, for he was an incarnation of God. But he warned that one should not be accepted as an incarnation of the personality of Godhead without having the godly qualities. At the present moment, there are so many so-called incarnations of the personality of Godhead, but these are merely fools and rascals whom people accept as incarnations of God, even though they have no godly qualities. King Prithu desired that his real characteristics in the future might justify such words of praise. Although there was no fault in the prayers offered, King Prithu Maharaj indicated that such prayers should not be offered to an unfit person who pretends to be an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. O gentle reciters, offer such prayers in due course of time, when the qualities of which you have spoken actually manifest themselves in me. The gentle who offer prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead do not attribute such qualities to a human being who does not actually have them. So there's a warning, as Prabhupada is explaining in the purport, there's an inherent implicit warning that ordinary human beings shouldn't be glorified as if they were the Supreme. That is not complimentary to them. Actually, it is an insult. Over-glorification is an insult to the person. Prabhupada explains in the purport. Although Prithu Maharaj was factually an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he rejected those praises because the qualities of the Supreme Person were not yet manifested in him. He hadn't done it yet. He hadn't acted. He hadn't distributed. He hadn't displayed his power as the Lord, so it was improper, thought he, for them to glorify him for possessing those powers, because he's making the point that before one can be glorified as God, one has to show the characteristics of God. He wanted to stress that one who does not actually possess these qualities should not try to engage his followers and devotees in offering him glory for them, even though these qualities might be manifest in the future. If a man who does not factually possess the attributes of a great personality engages his followers in praising him with the expectation that such attributes will develop in the future, that sort of praise is actually an insult. 6:24. So here, these are all words of Prithumaraj saying why he shouldn't be praised. How could an intelligent man, competent enough to possess such exalted qualities, allow his followers to praise him if he did not actually have them? So a very wonderful statement. If he's so intelligent, then why would he allow his followers to praise him with qualities that he doesn't have? So he's speaking very, very humbly. Praising a man by saying that if he were educated, he might have become a great scholar or a great personality is nothing but a process of cheating. A foolish person who agrees to accept such praise does not know that such words simply insult him. It's like saying, if you had some money, you would be so wonderful. So actually, you'd be so charitable if you had great wealth. If you were beautiful, you would be the most beautiful person. So you're basically saying that the person doesn't have any beauty. So praising for someone for something that he does not yet manifest is an insult. So through this, Prithu Maharaj is explaining that to beware those who praise others as, oh, you are God, incarnations of God, and this is popular in Kali Yuga. There are so many in India and out of India, so many so-called incarnations of God, and they allow their followers to say that they are Bhagavan. As a person with a sense of honor and magnanimity does not like to hear about his abominable actions, a person who is very famous and powerful does not like to hear himself praised. King Prithu continued, "My dear devotees, headed by the suttas, just now I am not very famous for my personal activities because I have not done anything praiseworthy you could glorify. Therefore, how could I engage you in praising my activities just like children?" That's the end of chapter 15. Now we'll read some of chapter 16. The great sage Maitreya continued, while King Prithu was thus spoke, the humility of his nectarian speeches pleased the reciters very much. Then again they continued to praise the king highly with exalted prayers, as they had been instructed by the great sages. Prabhupada's purport. By the word Muni Chodita indicates instructions received from great sages and famous persons. Although Maharaj Prithu was simply enthroned on the royal seat and was not at that time exhibiting his godly powers, the reciters like the suttas and magadhas and the vandis understood that King Prithu was an incarnation of God. They could understand this by the instructions given by the sages and learned brahmanas. And a little further down, reciters like the suttas and magadha were confidentially aware that King Prithu was an incarnation of the personality of Godhead. They understood this through the words of the sages. So although Prithu Maharaj was saying, no, don't glorify me, the sages were saying, yes, you should glorify him. Although the king denied such praise because he was not at that time exhibiting his godly qualities, the reciters did not stop praising him. Rather, they were very pleased with the king, who, although actually an incarnation of God, was so humble and delightful in his dealings with devotees. In this connection, we may note that previously it was mentioned that King Prithu was smiling and was in a pleasant mood while speaking to the reciters. Thus, we have to learn from the Lord or his incarnation how to become gentle and humble. The king's behavior was very pleasing to the reciters, and consequently the reciters continued their praise and even foretold the king's future activities as they had been instructed by the sadhus and sages. So they were going to say what he would do in the future. So we have to learn from the Lord and the Lord's devotees how to become gentle and humble. So the reciters continue, text 2. Dear King, you are a direct incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu. And by his causeless mercy, you have descended on this earth. Therefore, it is not possible for us to actually glorify your exalted activities. Although you have appeared through the body of King Vena, even great orators and speakers like Lord Brahma and other demigods cannot exactly describe the glorious activities of your lordship. In other words, they're saying that because you are the Lord and you've appeared by the Lord's mercy, you're empowered by the Lord, by his mercy you've descended. And that means you're unlimited, because the Lord is unlimited. So how could we, who are so limited, how could we glorify you? We have limited ability, and we see in a limited way. So whatever we say will be an under-glorification of you, because we can't realize the extent of your power and potency. So we cannot, no one can describe the potency and the glories of the Lord. That is the point they're making, because they're unlimited. And we saw previously with Dhruva Maharaj that Dhruva Maharaj couldn't pray properly until he was blessed by the Lord. So similarly, only one who is truly blessed by the Lord, given the potency by the Lord, has the ability to properly glorify him to some extent. Here's Prabhupada's purport. In this verse, the word mayaya means by your causeless mercy. The Mayavadi philosophers explain the word maya as meaning illusion or falseness. However, there is another meaning of maya, that is causeless mercy. There are two kinds of maya, yoga maya and mahamaya. Mahamaya is an expansion of yoga maya, and both these mayas are different expressions of the Lord's internal potencies. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord appears through his internal potencies, atma mayaya. We should therefore reject the mayavadi explanation that the Lord appears in a body given by the external potency, the material energy. The Lord and his incarnation are fully independent and can appear anywhere and everywhere by virtue of the internal potency. So what do the mayavadis say? They say that even when the material energy is so strong that even when God, who is formless, comes to this world, he accepts form, but that form is made of the material energy. That's called mayavad philosophy. It is made of the mode of goodness, and therefore it is called Ishwara, the Lord's form made of material energy, mode of goodness. So by saying the Lord's form is material, actually they become demons. Just by saying that, avajananti mamura manushyam tanamashrita param bhavam ajanato, they do not know the Lord's position. We should therefore reject the Mayavad explanation that the Lord appears in a body given by the external potency, the material energy. So Prabhupada has explained the word mayaya. There's two meanings of it: mercy and illusion. So the Mayavadi is when Krishna also says in the Bhagavad Gita, sambhavat yatma mayaya, that I come by my maya. So the mayavadis say again that I'm coming by my illusion, I'm taking birth by the illusory energy, but actually what it means, by my internal energy, by my causeless mercy, when Krishna comes and displays his wonderful pastimes with his devotees, it is by his mercy, causeless mercy. Why? To attract us from the material realm to the spiritual realm, because Krishna's pastimes are so wonderful. Because they display the sweetness in dealings and pastimes that everyone is longing for in this world. And if we don't fix our mind and consciousness on attaining these dealings, if our minds aren't attracted to attaining the relationship with Krishna, then we will continue being stuck, filled with desires for relationships only in the material world, and that will, when those desires are in our heart, again and again we will take birth in the material world. So to attract us to the spiritual realm, Krishna comes. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord appears through his internal potency, Atmamaya. We should therefore reject the Mayavad explanation that the Lord appears in a body given by the external potency, the material energy. The Lord and his incarnations are fully independent and can appear anywhere and everywhere by virtue of the internal potency. Although born out of the so-called dead body of King Vena, King Prita was still an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Prabhupada explains in the last paragraph of the purport. By glorifying the Lord with exalted verses, one becomes purified. Although we are unable to offer prayers to the Lord in an adequate fashion, our duty is to make the attempt in order to purify ourselves. It is not that we should stop our glorification because demigods like Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva cannot adequately glorify the Lord. Rather, as stated by Prahlad Maharaj, everyone should glorify the Lord according to his own ability. If we are serious and sincere devotees, the Lord will give us the intelligence to offer prayers properly. That means anyone, regardless if we're old devotees, young devotees, anything. If we just sincerely try to glorify Krishna for his pleasure, then Krishna will reciprocate with that sincerity. They continue. Although we are unable to glorify you adequately, we nonetheless have a transcendental taste for glorifying your activities. We shall try to glorify you according to the instructions received from authoritative sages and scholars. Whenever we speak, however, it is always inadequate and very insignificant. Dear King, because you are a direct incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, all your activities are liberal and ever laudable. Here's Prabhupada's purport. However expert one may be, he can never describe the glories of the Lord adequately. Nonetheless, those engaged in glorifying the activities of the Lord should try to do so as far as possible. Such an attempt will please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Lord Chaitanya has advised all his followers to go everywhere and preach the message of Lord Krishna. Since this message is essentially Bhagavad Gita, the preacher's duty is to study Bhagavad Gita as it is understood by disciplic succession and explained by great sages and learned devotees. One should speak to the general populace in accordance with one's predecessors, Sadhu, Guru, and Shastras. This simple process is the easiest method by which one can glorify the Lord. Devotional service, however, is the real method, for by devotional service one can satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead with just a few words. Without devotional service, volumes of books cannot satisfy the Lord. Even though preachers of the Krishna consciousness movement may be unable to describe the glories of the Lord, they can nonetheless go everywhere and request people to chant Hare Krishna. Okay, let's stop here. Are there any questions or comments?
Today.
Oh, today.
Yeah. Why did he have to mean Krishna can come any time, anywhere, he can disappear? Why did he have to come from such a such a strange application? Like it seems strange to come from the body of an evil king.
But it's however Krishna comes is wonderful, and however he comes, everyone could ask that same question: why did he have to come from a king in prison with his wife? Why did he have to come in whatever way he comes? One can ask, well, why did he come that way? But the reason is, Atma Maya, he comes the way he wants to come by his causeless mercy as he likes. He's not forced to come in any way, but he's amazing in the way he comes. He comes in completely amazing ways. Or he comes in seemingly ordinary ways. When he was born, you weren't here when we were reading the second canto, were you? When we were reading how Varahadeva was born from the nostril. Were you there for that?
I read it.
Yeah, he came as a boar from the nostril of Brahma. So that why did he have to come as a from the nostril of Brahma, as a teeny boar? I mean, that's also quite unique, isn't it? And being churned from the body of a sinful king, or taking his birth in prison as he did with Krishna, or from Vasudeva and Devaki. Why did he grow up in Vrindavan? Because these are all his pastimes, doing this. So the point is that however Krishna appears, when Krishna appears, it's always transcendental. It doesn't make a difference of how he appears or what form he's in. It's always God. So whether he appears in the form of a boar from the nostril of Brahma, or where he appears from a sinful king, if he's God, he's God. So again, these points are to prepare us in one sense for the most difficult birth to understand, and the most difficult activities to understand, which is Krishna's, because these are so far out in one sense that we could say, well, God can do whatever he wants. But how about when they superficially are ordinary? Like he grows up as a village boy. Now those are the more difficult ones to understand, because they so much mirror the activities of human beings. So we're being prepared for the concept that whatever God does, no matter what it seems like, it's completely transcendental, having nothing to do with the material world and special.
Does that mean, Maharaj, that if you were saying that everything the Lord does is to instruct us, that would be like an imitation? Because he might be doing it simply for his own pleasure?
Yeah, that's the highest understanding. That's the ultimate reason why he does anything that he does. Or for the pleasure of his devotees.
Is that meant to dig too deep and to understand it?
But there's different levels in the way we can understand. But that's the ultimate level, that it's all rasa. It's all relationship with his devotees, which is his pleasure. But that doesn't mean that the other levels aren't also there or true. And he comes out of his causeless mercy again to give, because the devotees need to think about him. So if he doesn't come and his activities aren't discussed in Shastra, like the Bhagavatam, we wouldn't be able to hear and talk about him and think about him. It would be, and then we'd think about just other things. We wouldn't even have a choice. So that's also his mercy, that he displays his pastimes in that way to give us something to enliven the process of hearing and chanting, as Kunti Devi says. very correct. He doesn't have to do everything that has a meaning. But everything he does is full of significance nonetheless. But the significance could be, this is what I want to do. He likes to walk around in the forest grounds of Vrindavan without his shoes on. Touching, blessing the earth with the touch of his lotus feet. Good observation. Any other question or comment?
Was it a surprise when he manifested himself, or did they know by chanting that?
The sages?
Yeah.
The sages knew what they were doing. But whether they knew that the Lord himself was going to come out, it doesn't seem to say. But they were trying to produce a proper king from the lineage of Dhruva Maharaj. That's what they were trying to do. And the Lord himself appeared to show how to be a real king. And then, so it'll be interesting when we, soon we'll hear about, starting in the next chapter, I think, in chapter 17, this chapter is going to predict all the activities of Pritu Maharaj. The professional reciters say all the things in the future that he's going to do. Then he starts doing them in the next chapter, and then we'll hear what kind of things he chooses to do. When Krishna rules as the king, because very often we will criticize the government, Kali Yuga government, and this and that. So what is real government? And how does a real ruler act? So when Krishna himself comes as the king, he demonstrates that. Okay. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Krishna Maharaj ki jai.